years, could not get our stories published. Anywhere. We typed in fits of Kerouacian ecstasy, swaddled our stories in manila envelopes, sent them out to small journals across the country. The rejections came back in our own self-addressed envelopes, like homing pigeons. So we stewed in our obscurity and futility. We were artists. We worked as course assistants and teachers of Creative Writing 101, reading Wallace Stevens poems to the uvulas of the yawning undergrad horde, moving ourselves to inspiration while the class spoke among itself. We kept office hours in a holding pen with 16 other teachers, and then went and drank cheap beer at Old Town Tavern, swapping lines from our rejection letters. As it began to dawn on us that the end of our cosseted academic ride was near, the tension ratcheted so high that we started spending extra time with the only people who were consistently more miserable than we were, the poets. In pictures from our graduation, we, my posse and I, looked so innocent. Like kids, really. Kids with full heads of hair and skinny bodies, and a glint of fear in our eyes, gazing out at the savage world and our futures. You can almost see our brains at work in those photos, now just hours away from the cruelest epiphany. Those preciously imagined short story collections and novels, copied and bound lovingly at Kinko's, called The Shape of Grief, or What the Helix Said, qualified us for, well, almost exactly nothing. Mine was entitled Augie Twinkle's Lament and detailed, some might say excruciatingly, the progress of a minor league pitcher to his final game on the mound where, after being shelled, he exits over the center field fence, discarding his uniform piece by piece in grief-stricken striptease. From there, left only in his codpiece, he goes on a laundry-stealing binge. And the rest, you'll have to trust me, is heartrending, humorous, and deeply compelling. Which is what led me to a local deli, a place called Zingerman's, to see if they needed an extra sandwich maker on weekends. This was Zingerman's before it did $44 million in annual sales and possessed a 500,000 customers, but it was already an Ann Arbor legend, a fabled arcade of fantastic food, a classic, slightly cramped New York-style deli in the Midwest, with a tin ceiling, black-and-white tiled floor, and the yummiest delicacies from around the world. The shelves overflowed with bottles of Italian lemonade, exotic marmalade spreads and tapenades. The brothy smell of matzo ball soup permeated the place. On Saturday mornings before Michigan football games, people thronged, forming a line down Kingsley Street. The sandwiches cost twice as much as anywhere else, and whenever we splurged as students, we'd go there and stand in the long line, the longer the better, actually, just to prolong the experience. Then we'd order from colorful chalkboards hung from the ceiling, detailing a cornucopia of sandwiches with names like Gemini Rocks the House, Who's Greenberg Anyway, and The Ferber Experience, each made on homemade farm bread or grilled challah or Jewish rye stuffed with Amish chicken breast or peppered ham or homemade pastrami with Wisconsin Munster or Switzerland Swiss or Manchester creamy cheddar and topped with applewood smoked bacon or organic sunflower sprouts or honey mustard. In the days before the rise of gourmand culture, before our obsession with purity and pesticides, before the most fetishistic of us could sit over plates of Humboldt fog, expounding on our favorite truffles or estate-bottled olive oil, Zingerman's preached a new way of thinking about food. Eat the best and eat homemade. Why choke down oversalted processed chicken soup when you might slurp Zingerman's rich stock with its tender carrots and hint of rosemary? Why suffer any old chocolate when you might indulge in handcrafted chocolate-covered clementines from some picturesque village in northern Italy? Treats that exploded in your mouth, the citrus flooding in tingles across the tongue, with the melted cocoa spreading beneath it, lifting and wrapping the clementine once again, but differently now, in the sweetest chocolate-orange cradle of sensory pleasure. Judging by the towering shelves of rare five-star products from around